Welcome to Essence, your weekly dose of Essence magazine. I am Cherise Stevens, a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Today, I am reading articles from the Fall-Winter 2025 issue of Essence magazine. Some of the articles I will be reading are The Freedom of Evolving, The Beauty of Becoming, Olympic gold medal winning gymnast Jordan Childs shares hard-earned lessons and pays her blessings forward. From Fear to Freedom, a stylist shares how his hair journey became a form of creative self-proclamation. Power Players. Our first article is The Freedom of Evolving, The Beauty of Becoming. With a memoir, a mentorship program, and a fresh outlook, Jordan Childs is redefining strength through softness, sisterhood, and self-belief. By Carissa Mitchell. When Jordan Childs answers our Zoom call, she's glowing. She has just moved into her first home, juggling boxes and press tours, with the same bright spirit that carried her from the Olympic podium to the cover of Sports Illustrated. I finally found my safe space, my circle, she says, exhaling into the moment. I've just been really enjoying life. That's really all I can say, just enjoying life. Enjoying the ability to wake up every morning and just, you know, thank God for waking me up another day and continuing to push for dreams and goals that I have. It's a glimpse into where she is today, settled, softer, and more grounded than the spunky gymnast the world saw at the Tokyo and Paris Olympics. Now 24, with a New York Times best-selling memoir, I'm That Girl, Living the Power of My Dreams, and a UCLA return under her belt, Childs is writing the next chapter, one that extends far beyond medals. When asked what joy looks like for her right now, Childs doesn't hesitate. Peace. Waking up and not feeling like I have to carry so much weight on my shoulders, allowing myself to breathe. It's a striking reflection from someone who has carried the expectations of a nation. She was just 20 when she stepped onto the Tokyo Olympics, helping to secure silver for Team USA alongside her close friend Simone Biles. Paris 2024 was supposed to be her coronation, Team Gold with Biles and Sunisa Lee, plus a historic all-black podium on-floor exercise. Instead, she was stripped of her bronze medal after a late score inquiry, a ruling that still feels cruel for an athlete who had delivered the performance of her life. But Childs refuses to let anyone's score define her. She's pursuing legal avenues to reclaim the Olympic bronze medal, and she's living out the very persistence that mirrors her message. If Tokyo was about stepping up and Paris was about resilience, today is about healing. I'm learning I don't have to be in survival mode, she explains. The gymnast who once electrified arenas with her firecracker energy is embracing something new. She calls it her soft girl era. I was always seen as this ball of energy, she says, a smile breaking across her face. But now I'm all simplicity, calmness, and softness. I'll be 25 next year, and that doesn't mean I'm any less me. It just means I'm growing. That evolution is at the heart of where Childs stands today. Still an Olympic medalist, still a dazzling floor performer, a cultural shifter, and a devoted sneakerhead, but also a young woman writing her own definitions of strength, sisterhood, and success. She's learning to slow down and appreciate the life she's building off the mat. I didn't get to do a lot of stuff when I was younger, she says. So establishing this now, as I'm older, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Part of that healing has come from the bonds of sisterhood she has built, both inside and outside the gym. Her bond with Simone Biles has been well documented, but Childs lights up when talking about other unexpected connections that also keep her grounded. Normani? Oh my gosh, she says with a laugh, recalling a recent conversation with the singer. She's literally looked at me and said, "Girl, I know exactly how you feel." And it was like, wow, somebody outside of gymnastics sees me. That was so special. It's those moments that remind her that she's not alone in navigating the pressures of being young, Black, and brilliant on a public stage. "Community is everything," she says. "It's what keeps me whole." And the moment when she realized that she'd be okay after the Paris heartbreak, I probably would say when I got to do my Sports Illustrated 60th anniversary swimsuit issue, celebrating my body and my confidence on my own terms, she reflects. That was one time I was finally just like, wow, people are still supporting me. That experience, she says, taught her how to release what she couldn't control. Her book helped too. Writing her memoirs meant reliving childhood trauma and emotional scars left by a coach early in her life. For the first time, she opened up about the darker chapters of her life. For Childs, strength now means honesty. "There are days when I just sit there crying," she admits. "It was hard, but it was freeing too, because you can't heal what you keep hiding." Her honesty has struck a chord with readers, and especially with young Black women who see themselves in her willingness to speak the truth out loud. Today, Childs is back competing for UCLA, but her vision stretches further. "Beyond the gym, I'm really venturing out into different worlds," she says. She quotes Megan Thee Stallion with a grin. "This year, I did my big one. Next year, I'm going bigger." Perhaps her proudest venture yet has nothing to do with medals. Childs has built Shero, a mentorship collective for young athletes, activists, and dreamers who are navigating sports and self-discovery. "Shero is my heart," she says. "I don't want others to go through the same struggles and pain I did without support. Let's strive for greater together. I want girls to know they don't have to choose between being strong and being soft. You can be both." This season isn't about medals or milestones for Childs. It's about moving at her own pace, savoring her becoming, and holding her loved ones close. It's about chasing the power of her dreams while protecting her voice and identity. Even in spaces where others might question her belonging, during our conversation, she couldn't stress enough that wearing a crown is not about standing on podiums, but about knowing you are that girl. No matter where life places you, after years of chasing perfection, Childs is embracing a different rhythm, one rooted in gentleness, trust in herself, and the reminder she carries with her every day. You are enough just as you are. Don't ever let the world make you believe otherwise. In those words, you can hear both the survivor and the dreamer, the athlete and the woman. The girl who grew up under the bright lights and the one learning to light her own way. Jordan Childs is still flipping, still fighting, still rising, still shining. But on her terms now. And that just might be her greatest routine yet. From Fear to Freedom, a stylist and travel editor opens up about his hair journey and how he learned the power of a good cut, by Alexander Julian Gibson. For many kids, hair is a playground, a place for self-expression and experimentation. For me, it was a battlefield, and my mom was the general, armed with practicality, marshaling friends and family far and wide as they used their clippers. Her goal was efficiency. She was a single mother, working exhausting hours doing what she could, and that typically meant finding the cheapest haircut available. For us, that was often from the $5 Chinese barbershop down the street. The Chinese barber once gave me some sort of bacterial infection on my scalp. I still have the bald spot. But if I'm being totally honest, almost every haircut I had early on was a disaster. My aunt used to cut my cousin's hair and mine in her bathroom. The experience was excruciating. Hot clippers, jagged lines, and occasional cuts into the skin. My uncle once put a literal bowl on my head and trimmed around it. and my mom's boyfriend, well, he'd eventually become infamous for destroying one of the most important hair moments of my young life. With a record like that, I never saw getting a haircut as something to enjoy. It was something to survive. That changed in second grade. I was 8 years old when my teacher's daughter, who was dating a barber, offered to take me to a black barbershop. It was a small gesture on her part, but it was a monumental shift for me. For the first time ever, I walked away from a chair smiling. The cut was clean, the vibe was affirming, and my edge up was sharp. I remember confessing my love to my crush the very next day after school, because I felt just that confident. She ultimately rejected me, but I still felt like the man. After that, hair became something I cared about, which is why not long after, when my mom's boyfriend cut my hair again before my first day at a new school and ruined my edge up beyond recognition, I wept. I cried the entire night because now I understood what was being taken from me. The feeling of looking like myself, the power of a good cut, the dignity of being seen the way you want to be. I didn't grow up with my dad to teach me the mechanics, and truth be told, being Nigerian, I'm not sure he would have added much value anyway. My uncle was Nigerian too. See the bowl cut? So everything I learned about my hair, I learned the hard way, like how waves weren't just about brushing. When I was 12, I spent hours dragging a dry brush across my scalp, trying to carve waves into my head like a sculptor, until my hair turned into a crop of bone-straight thistle across my head. Then I discovered pomade and overcorrected. My hair was greasy for months, but eventually I figured it out. And when those waves finally showed up, it felt like I had unlocked some secret code, a private joy, hard-earned and deeply felt. High school opened the door to reinvention. I experimented with mohawks, flat tops, and as much hair dye as I was allowed. My hair became a revolving diary, a physical manifestation of whatever phase I was in at the time. When I was shopping at Hot Topic, wearing studded belts and listening to Party Like a Rock Star a la the 2007 Shop Boys, I had a mohawk. When I was deep into 80s and 90s fashion, I rocked a high flat top. Every style was a response to who I was becoming or wanted to become. Hair was language. It was what I couldn't always afford to say through clothes. It gave me access to style when money didn't. I've always believed that how you present yourself to the world is a form of preemptive self-belief. Fashion doesn't just help you show who you are. It helps you become the person you're growing into. Hair does the same. You don't just wear it, you wear yourself through it. That belief only deepened as I got older. In a Nigerian household where long hair on boys was practically a sin, the idea of getting braids felt like crossing a forbidden line. I didn't get them until I was 27. Growing up, if I wasn't next to bald, my hair was seen as wild and unruly. So the first time I sat in a stylist's chair and felt my hair pulled into parts, woven tightly into plaits. It felt like more than a new style. It was a reclamation, a late coming rite of passage I wasn't allowed to have before. Then came the grays. I found my first ones at 25, but by the time I was 28, they had taken over an overwhelming amount of real estate. At first, I panicked. After a call with my dad, who told me he was fully gray by the age of 33, it all made sense. The panic turned into pride. This, too, was a style I'd come to wear. A page in the archive, a sign of time doing what it does best, evolving you. These days, my hair is a sight of freedom. I've done a lot, but Bantu knots are still on the list. I use a lot of Secret because it works, but also because if I'm trusting anyone with my hair, it might as well be Beyonce. I've also become obsessed with beads. As someone who loves jewelry, I feel there's something beautiful about adorning your tresses the same way you do your body. A simple way to add the weight of personality to a style. A small ornament of self woven into my roots. If there's one thing this journey has taught me, it's that style isn't just about aesthetics. It's about becoming. My hair has been a timeline, a mood board, and a trial and error guide to growing into myself, bad haircuts included. It's given me space to experiment, permission to fail, and reasons to smile in the mirror again. All this is proof that what felt like a battlefield became a magnificent canvas. You are listening to Essence with Charisse Stevens on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Essence Power Players 2025. As Essence celebrates 55 transformative years, we honor the boundary breakers, dream builders, and culture shifters who are rewriting the rules of power and winning. By Kimberly Wilson. In a world that's constantly trying to box us in, these luminaries are breaking down barriers, building bridges, and creating entirely new spaces where we can flourish. They're the CEOs who remember where they came from, the artists who refuse to be silenced, the entrepreneurs turning their pain into purpose, and the athletes using their platforms to uplift entire communities. Meet the visionaries who aren't just changing the rules, they are creating entirely new playing fields. Essence presents its 2025 class of innovators and power brokers who are reinventing the game. In business, Vanessa Wallace, age 48, title Chief Marketing Officer, Savage X Fenty. When Vanessa Wallace left Nike after 19 years, the previous head of brand marketing and marketing director for the Jordan brand made the leap to become CMO of Savage X Fenty, where she's reshaping what inclusive marketing looks like. The former University of Texas basketball player initially aspired to become a lawyer before pivoting to marketing. This year, she's proudest of having led a brand evolution that deepened both cultural relevance and consumer connection while staying true to Savage X Fenty's unapologetic DNA. Her biggest challenge was leaving the comfort and familiarity of Nike to step into something completely new. But she knew that growth required evolution. Wallace's advice to the next generation, own your voice. Don't wait for permission to take up space. And as you rise, reach back to make room for others. Telva Magruder, age 56, title Executive Director of Global Manufacturing Engineering, General Motors. Telva Magruder was 14 years old when she watched a TV show special about the first artificial heart transplant. That moment hooked her on engineering. Decades later, she's at General Motors, solving complex engineering and human problems. Magruder made history as GM's first Chief Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Officer before moving into her current manufacturing role. This year alone, she oversaw a major technical pivot for her team while juggling strategic work on a nonprofit board. She's all about putting people first because she believes that's where real innovation happens. Her message to young professionals: don't let anyone limit your possibilities. Monica Turner, age 60, title President North America P&G. Monica Turner started as a P&G intern in 1987 with a business and marketing degree from the University of Oklahoma. Nearly four decades later, she runs the operation that represents 50% of the company's net sales. Turner climbed through sales, strategy, and planning roles, making a significant impact across categories before becoming president of North America. Over the past 6 years, she has delivered breakthrough growth for P&G, serving 370 million consumers across the region. Her advice to young professionals is straightforward: be unapologetically yourself. Don't shy away from taking risk. And surround yourself with mentors who believe in your ability to make an impact. Robin Washington, age 63, title President and Chief Operating and Financial Officer, Salesforce. Robin Washington walked into Salesforce headquarters and convinced them to create a C-suite job that had not existed before, then got them to give it to her. If that's not a boss move, then we don't know what is. After spending over a decade as a board member of the cloud-based software company, most recently as lead independent director, she became the first ever chief operating and financial officer, uniting operations and finance under a single umbrella to drive growth in the AI era. Washington's advice to up-and-comers spans 10 key principles. Those include adopting a can-do mindset, managing your brand, networking, finding allies, and being your authentic self while setting clear boundaries. Pamela Stewart, age undisclosed, title Chief Customer Officer Retail, North America Operating Unit at the Coca-Cola Company. Pamela Stewart has built her career around two simple but powerful goals: creating safe spaces where people feel comfortable in their own skin, and pushing others beyond what they think they can achieve. After more than 20 years of climbing through the various executive roles across the Coca-Cola system, she now spearheads a $10 billion revenue customer organization, covering everything from grocery stores to military channels. This year, she can't stop talking about her team. Their resilience and commitment have been everything, and watching them grow feels better than any business win. Stewart doesn't just talk about inclusion, she acts on it. By mentoring underrepresented voices and making sure every perspective is heard in rooms where decisions get made, her toughest career moments came from navigating corporate America as a minority. It's why she tells young professionals to figure out their personal North Star, because they'll need that compass when things get rocky. Tamira Chapman, age 46, title Entrepreneur, Attorney, and CEO, Storehouse and Box Publisher, Storehouse Voices. Before Tamira Chapman became a publishing powerhouse, she was an attorney handling intellectual property cases. Then her work with Michelle Obama sparked the idea for Storehouse Voices, her new publishing imprint with Penguin Random House. Chapman had already built a merchandising empire with Storehouse in a Box, a brand merchandising business recognized as the 8th fastest growing woman-owned company globally in 2022. Now she's tackling a different challenge, getting more Black voices published. Chapman doesn't see obstacles. She sees opportunities wrapped in a no. Her vision extends beyond books into film and television, creating what she calls generational ecosystems, where culture just doesn't get a seat at the table, but owns the whole conference room. Tiffany Burns, age 45, title Senior Partner and Managing Partner for the Southern U.S., McKinsey & Company. Tiffany Burns has spent her career at the crossroads of business transformation and consumer trends. A Harvard Business School graduate, she now leads McKinsey's Southern region, overseeing offices across Houston, Dallas, Austin, Atlanta, and Miami. This year brought a personal milestone with her alma mater invited her to give a commencement address with her kids, Noah and Carter. Watching from the front row, Burns, who has championed equity initiatives throughout her tenure, helped lead McKinsey's 10 Actions Toward Racial Equity program, which committed $200 million in pro bono efforts to Black communities. And she was the architect of the firm's next 1B Business Accelerator for Black Founders, which has impacted over 200 entrepreneurs. Burns learned early from her late mother to make others see her the way she sees herself. Her advice to the next generation centers on gratitude, grit, and showing up, especially when virtual attendance seems easier than physical presence. Christopher Womack, age 67, title Chairman, President, and CEO, Southern Company. Christopher Womack never imagined when he was growing up in rural Alabama that he'd run one of America's largest energy companies. The Greenville native didn't see a building taller than 2 stories as a child, nor did he know what a corporate CEO was. After he worked with consumer advocate Ralph Nader in Washington, D.C., and as a legislative aide to Leon Panetta in the House of Representatives, he thought his role at Alabama Power would be temporary. More than 3 decades later, he's leading the company through historic achievements. This year, Womack is proudest of bringing online Vogtle Unit 3, completing the first new nuclear units built in the U.S. in over 30 years. The complex project will deliver power for the next 60 to 80 years and can run reliably around the clock. His advice to the next generation centers on having relentless curiosity and remembering that people are at the heart of everything. Damola Adamolekum, age 36, title CEO Red Lobster. Born in Nigeria in 1989, Damola Adamolekum spent his entire childhood bouncing between Zimbabwe and the Netherlands before settling in Springfield, Illinois at age 9. He reportedly waited tables in high school, then landed a Goldman Sachs internship at 19, while studying economics and political science at Brown University. After stints at Goldman Sachs and TPG Capital, Adamolekum became the youngest CEO in P.F. Chang's history. He then took on Red Lobster's turnaround at 36. Adamolekum is now the youngest CEO Red Lobster has ever had, and he's passionate about creating experiences that bring people together. Adamolekum's approach is simple. Aim to be the very best at what you do, and understand that greatness takes discipline and unceasing effort. You have been listening to Essence, with readings from the Fall-Winter 2025 issue of Essence magazine. I am Charisse Stevens, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. Have a great day.